Welcome to episode 56 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is October the 21st, 2012. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my old brother, James Furlough.
That's right, and here's one of my birthday presents. It's a Superman Snuggie. Now, what you can't see, actually, is it's like a body, right? Not just a symbol.
Right.
So when I stand up, I look like Superman. I'm rocking it today. Nice. We'll see how it goes.
You look like Superman, but the cape is on forward.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Snuggies are very strange, I'll be honest. I sit in like a regular chair, you know, so my back is cold.
Yeah, see, that's like rough. That's a rough part of it. I don't know how you're going to fix that. But people used to like make fun of Snuggies because they're like, oh man, they're just a backwards bathrobe. It's just a bathrobe on front. And I was always like, that's the same argument people used to make like when the iPad was being announced. It's just a big iPod Touch. And you're like, how is it not the coolest thing ever?
So now, I honestly think I would be okay with, and I guess you would call this a nightgown, where if it were just like a cylinder with the sleeves and I could just, you know, with a hole in the top that I could just kind of slide over, and that way it would be like I'm wrapped in a blanket but have long sleeves.
Yeah. That'd be pretty cool.
I think that's called a nightgown.
Yeah, and I think Snuggies are intended for like sitting and watching TV or playing on your iPad on a couch.
Well, I'm thinking if I have this, I could take like a blanket and, you know, wrap it around like you would normally do when you were a kid playing video games in the morning.
Yeah.
You know? And then you're like,
the arm warmth is pretty nice. I'll be honest. That's, you know, it might be worth the added complication to get the whole system set up. But believe it or not, we're not actually here to talk about Snuggies. We talk about every week, and that's technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, their conflicts, and the technology they're developing. Before we get into the show, James has got a short disclosure that he wants to deliver for us.
Yes, I am still gainfully employed at HP. However, during this podcast, I do not represent HP or any of their opinions. So when referring to HP-related matters, I should always say I. And if I say we, I meant to say I.
All right. That's good to know.
It's good to
be. Yeah. If you'd like to show... Man, I'm having a rough time tonight. Sentences start, and I'm like, I don't finish. So if you'd like to follow us throughout the week and read our interesting tweets, like me celebrating the Giants' victory tonight.
Tying it up, forcing game seven. When is game seven?
Oh, man. It's what? When is it?
Yeah.
It is tomorrow during the presidential debate.
Oh. Choices.
So it's an easy choice. I'm going to go to somebody who is TiVo, and we're going to watch the baseball game. And then we'll catch the important parts of the presidential debate.
Do you even need to? I mean, like, can't you just watch the presidential debates online afterwards, like on YouTube? I know. I'll be honest. I actually have missed the last two. I only caught the first one.
What?
Well, I've been busy, and I plan, of course, to watch it. And check this out, because Oregon does. Is this one mine? No. Since Oregon does away ballots, I got mine right here.
I know, man. I've had mine for a week. It's hard to not just vote, get done early with. But I don't want to be a low-information voter.
Sure.
Which is the LIVs, the low-information voters. I've realized that that's a new politically correct way to say stupid people who vote.
All right.
And now that you've heard that term, you'll hear it in the media all the time. It's pretty funny.
Well, so here's the problem, because I think you just named me, because I don't listen to, like, talk news shows at all, so I never hear that phrase. So I think I am one of those voters.
Oh, you might be. You might be.
I'd much rather listen to tech podcasts, but what can I say?
Hey, you know what? That's a good point. That is a good point. Anyways, what was I talking? Oh, if you want to hear about all this stuff, you can follow me on Twitter. My Twitter account is at Matthew D. Furlow. It's actually more interesting than I like never talk about politics.
It's good. I am at James Furlow. I don't know what I do. I think I tweeted out a picture this evening about our pastors were we had a tailgate party at our church just to celebrate the playoffs, actually. Oh, not to celebrate. It was an excuse to have a big church get-together thing.
Right.
So you take it. So it was a tailgate party. And at it, they had a dunk tank, which our pastors all took turns on. So
nice.
I tweeted out a picture of that. Well, technically, I took a picture on Instagram and shared it to all the different social networks.
Technically. Cool. So, wait, what playoffs are you guys celebrating? I mean, like, do you guys have a team in your region that you're rooting for in particular? Is it just yay, go baseball?
We wanted to get together and barbecue and so they were all kind of like, we could do Beaver football because that would be the big obvious one, and I think at the time they planned it, they didn't know that the Beavers were going to be like 6-0. And so they set it up as a baseball playoffs theme, except they're so we had like a home run derby, so there was that.
Nice.
Which, by the way, I got second place. I lost to a high school senior baseball player.
Well.
What are you going to do?
Cry. Weep.
I got Cracker Jacks out of it. It was okay.
Nice. Nice.
So that's what I tweet out, at James Furlow.
Cool. And then the show where we just talk about tech stuff, it's at Furlow Bros. And then there's the website with all sorts of cool clicks and links and any of the videos that we play or show or funny stuff we talk about. Or just if you hear something and you're like, that doesn't sound right, I don't believe their sources, go to the website. Guess what? All of our sources are there. How exciting. This is the best show online. Nobody else does that kind of stuff for you. We do because we're nice. So check it out. It's pretty sweet.
All right.
But
so you got news about Mark Zuckerberg?
Oh yeah. So okay, I'm up first. Cool.
Intimate
I'm up to bat
personal
first,
details?
As it were. Yeah. So turns out that Mark Zuck, that's what I call him. He's not cool with it, but he deals with it.
He doesn't even know. It's okay.
I know. He's not aware that I exist.
You're not friends on Facebook with him?
No, I'm not.
It's okay.
We should be, though, because it turns out he's going to be buying a house in Noe Valley in San Francisco. If you do you know where the Noe Valley is?
Noe Valley? How do you spell that?
N-O-E.
Oh. No, I don't.
All right. Cool. This is pretty nice place up in San Francisco.
Sure it is.
But the reason I'm bringing it up is because I happen to hang out there on a, not a regular basis, but a couple times. Because okay. I actually have a friend who lives there. So I'm pretty excited. I'm hoping that I was looking on Facebook. It's like Mark Zuck's going to be living really close. So we're probably going to have to go and figure out exactly where, if possible.
think
I'm pretty excited.
it's not spying. That is, what's that called? I can't remember now. Stalking? I think that's what that's called.
Whatever, man. It's Facebook. It's if anybody should be cool with stalking, it's Mark Zuckerberg. Come on now.
Fair enough.
Personal information can't be safe and secure and private, but his can. That seems uncool.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying. Somehow I think the lawyers aren't going to agree with me, but hey, it doesn't mean I can't try.
Sure. Cool. Congratulations on having a friend who lives next to somebody who's famous.
Is. Hey, it's... Hey, man. You gotta pull them when you can.
Well, you should be mentioning all the time, I live next to Steve Wozniak. Whoa.
That's true. I hang out with his son every once in a while.
There you go.
In the bars in Los Gatos. That's how I roll.
Yeah. There you go. Well, that's cool. Fine.
Let's move on, man.
So you talk about friends. I talk about family. Because I don't live near family, one of the things that I have to do is I have to fly to go see said family. And HipMonk is my absolute favorite website for searching out flights because of their visual presentation style. Have you ever used HipMonk? At least
visited? I have not. I'll be totally honest, I haven't. So guess what?
It's pretty fun. I actually, there'll be times where I'll be like, huh, I wonder how much it would cost me to fly to Italy tomorrow. And so are you trying it right now?
Yeah.
So pick a destination, SJC.
Italy.
To Italy, and it'll give you some hotels. And then what's cool about it, we'll see it, is the way that it presents it is it gives you each flight is listed out, and it shows you visually here's how long it will take, and it's color-coded by the different airlines. And then if there's legs, it tells you the gaps. If it has Wi-Fi, it'll tell you that. And it tells you the times and then the prices as well. And they sort them. The default sort is by agony, which is pretty funny, which is like their way of saying, you know, cheapest may not always be the best. There's other considerations, which is legitimate. Though I would find, as a general rule, the absolute cheapest flight is in the top five. And,
yeah,
you know, that's the way that it is. And because I like to fly with United, because I get points and blah, 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 I tend to go like, okay, wherever theirs is kind of where I'm headed. So anyways, it's a cool site. It's, like I said, you can get totally lost in it, just kind of like, oh, I wonder how much a flight to New York would be in a week.
Whoa.
Just because it's visually cool. Anyways.
So to go from San Jose to Rome, you're looking at least $1,200, pretty much. That's your dirt cheap, $1,189.
So who's that with?
United.
Nice, there you go. Get you points. And where do they have you stop off at?
It doesn't
click on it.
Okay, San Jose to Flumichico. I'm going to go into Denver, and then from Denver to Newark, then from Newark to Flumico. I'm sure I'm saying it completely wrong.
Probably.
Yeah, so I'm stopping in Denver and then Newark and then stopping off in Italy.
So there you go. So cool site, right? I mean, just you can almost instantly tell here's the flight that I want.
Right.
And what I've noticed is, and that number, that actual price, that's after all the fees and everything that's counted into it. So that is your final number.
Nice.
So it's just a cool way of showing it. I use it, and I found that their prices they're just as cheap as anybody else's. Because they use whatever the same system everyone else uses. So there you go. Which I think Google technically owns that system. But anyways. They have come out with a new cool feature, which, I mean, everybody has this, I guess. So this really isn't that big of news. But they have new fare alerts where you could say, like, for example, with me, I'm looking for a flight to potentially go to Colorado for Christmas. I just want to see, you know, let me know when prices change. So I ended up actually, so far I've gotten like an email like every day, and it's actually been kind of depressing because today it just went up like $30 a ticket. It's like, dang it. I don't think we're going to go, but you know, I signed up for it because I saw it was new and I was like, no, I'm actually looking at tickets. But it's kind of a cool thing to, and it literally, it's just the fare update. There aren't like ads or the other stuff that you'd get with other airfare.
Nice.
Alerts and things. I wish it would be like, dude, just tell me if the price goes down. That's all I really want to know. And even then, it'd be nice if it were like, and I really only want to know if the price goes down by like $50. Because then I'd set up like an alert to a bunch of different places. Hey, take me to California or somewhere. But anyways, cool little feature. New to HipMonk.
Cool.
I like it.
Nice.
It's a good service.
Yeah. I like it. I like it a lot. I'll have to check that out. Check it out.
They do actually, they have an iPhone app as well. And it was funny. We were in Anaheim watching one of Jesse's brother's graduations, and his parents were like, "So, what are you doing after graduation?" He's like, "I don't know. Don't have any plans." I'm like, "We're sitting there at graduation dinner, right?" He's done.
Yeah.
As of tonight. And they're like, "Well, you should just come home with us." He was like, "Whoa. Well, I don't have a plane ticket." And they were like, "Well, we can get one." And that was where I went, "Hey, I have an app for this. I can do it. I have an iPhone." And so I got out the app and said, "Okay, here are your different choices. Here are your prices. When do you want to leave?" And I bought him a plane ticket on my iPhone and using HipMunk. It was awesome.
That is really cool. That man. Oh, see, that could be an iPhone commercial right there. That is.
Dude, well, it really was, because there were, 20 people around this table, and they all watched me excitedly do it.
We're going to do this right now. Get the ticket.
I'm like, tell me your card number. I'm typing it in, which, man, if I had a Square and that could somehow magically integrate with it, be like, boop, flight ticket purchased, done. Oh,
that would be pretty cool.
Or, if Apple had somehow like the, or Android, I suppose, with the NFC and the PayPass thing where you just take the credit card and tap it up against it and they got to type in their secret PIN number or something. Done.
That'd be awesome.
Just think about it. Or I guess the other thing HipMunk could do, which I suppose is what companies do, right? They just you make it an in-app purchase. I guess that's how you would do it. And you just have to be willing to give up 30% or whatever the Android equivalent is. I just do it that way. I guess that's the easiest way to do it.
Yeah.
And then I use Square for them to repay me.
Right. Yeah. That is really the least painful way, though.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. That's cool. I'll have to, next time I'm flying somewhere, I'll have to check out HipMunk.
Even if you're not flying somewhere, it's fun. If you're looking for flights to Rio in, you could see, if I bought them next summer, what kind of prices am I looking at?
It won't tell me. But actually, they might tell me for next summer. That's soon enough.
Well, that was I don't however far out it needs to be.
Yeah, because it's 300 days. I looked into this. Hey, everybody, did I ever announce my plans?
I don't remember. I don't think so.
I'm going to Rio for the Olympics in 4 years. I'm super excited.
Just to clarify, you don't have to. You're just going to buy. You've decided you want to go, and you're saving up to go. It's not tickets, or you're not competing.
No, there are no tickets for sale for any ass. There's you can't get housing yet because it's too far out. You can't get plane tickets till less than a year out, and the Rio actual tickets. Nobody in the entire world except for, people who are part of the planning committee are actually for sure going. I've committed myself. And am making financial preparations for that.
Which is awesome.
I know. I'm excited. So, I get excited about robots. This is story time with Matthew. when I was young, our grandfather told, kind of ID'd me as, I think he'd be a good engineer when I was young and 10. And I was like, what's an engineer? I had no idea. And they kind of explained it as these people who sit around and design and build things. He didn't emphasize about how much math and science was involved. So it's kind of dumb luck that I was pretty good at that.
Details.
but growing up, people would ask me, what do you want to be? And into my teens and whatnot, I'd always say, I want to be an engineer. They'd ask what kind of engineer, and I'd be like, I have a choice. What do you mean? it's just not an all-encompassing thing. And it wasn't until I was watching. This is great. This is the epitome of how nerdy I am. It wasn't until I was watching Star Wars Episode I, and I saw the robots, the droids, going and killing everybody, that I thought, Oh man, you know what's really cool? Robots.
Ah.
I didn't necessarily want to go into the human killing robot business, but I did want to go into the robot business, and I remember that as being kind of a light bulb moment for me. And that has sort of set my path and ever since, and I'm now on that career path, which is really exciting. But anytime robot, like serious robotic advancements happen in the news, I get super excited. And then this one dovetailed with my personal life quite well, so I definitely want to bring this to you. Basically, there's this company, they're called Blue River Technology. They're a startup founded in 2011 by two Stanford University alumni.
They're pretty young.
And oh yeah. And they are they are building robots, basically Roombas of a sort, that will go into a field with like lettuce and stuff, and as it goes through the field, these robots will have cameras and they'll take pictures of leaves, and they'll identify plants by their leaves, and if they find the plant leaf is a weed, it'll pick it out and tear it out of the system.
Nice.
Yeah, it's really cool. And the best part about it is it's 98% accurate. So it gets
Nice.
and they don't really break down what that accuracy means, if that means it gets 98% of all the weeds or if it catches 2% of the actual plant product. I don't know. But the point is that this like yeah, this like 2-year-old company actually has like working models and stuff.
Working prototypes, you mean?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Prototypes. What's really cool is I was reading the first paragraph of the article, and this is where it got really exciting for me. It said they have announced that they got $3.1 million in funding from an angel investor led by Kosla Ventures. Which, if you don't know who Kosla Venture is, don't worry about it. I'll give you a little inside information. Kosla Ventures is led by a dude named Vinod Kosla. He happens to be the uncle of one of my former coworkers. And the reason I was working with his nephew was because I was working for Kalera Corporation of Los Gatos slash Moss Landing. And Kosla was the number one funder of Kalera.
Oh.
So I've worked for
How's
him.
that one worked out?
Awful. Well, it's the problem with that technology was turns out it's difficult to introduce a super high tech process and try to produce like an unbelievably cheap commodity that's already found its natural bottom. They developed a bunch of cool technology, but yeah, that man, that is a long and complicated story that I'm not entirely sure. Well, I could probably get into it.
No need.
I
So
gotta say.
these guys, Koshla, so what's exciting about Koshla investing
Kosla?
them is, yeah, is that, they've, besides the fact that they have a ton of money, it just, it's a way of, I'm struggling with words tonight.
Me too.
It's a way of, what am I looking for? Proving that it's a good idea, or not proving, but at least they're going, hey, these guys trust them. Must be.
Coastal Adventures is like a big time investment firm. They've got an unbelievable amount of money,
Wow.
and they really focus on technologies that are their big thing right now. Is they're trying to sorry.
Trying to
Jeez, yeah. We're told we're both of us. What's going on this tonight? They're really big into like green technology and trying to catch that wave of what's the next big thing. And a lot of times green energy gets a bad rap and deservedly so. It's an investment that doesn't pan out very often. But the thing is that it is such a big potential building thing that something's gonna break, and they want and Coastal wants to be in on it. And one of the companies that they're big investor in is Bloom Energy. And Bloom Energy is like a they're really really doing well right now. They're actually one of the big green energy type companies. Mm-hmm. They've definitely got a future. And the thing is that, you know, yeah, so it's that just having that venture backing is speaks a lot of lots of confidence. But one of the reasons that this is so exciting is because you've got one crop with one set of, you know, of plants that it's identifying. That it can do things automatically, but you know, at this point in our industrial revolution, you know, we decided that we didn't want to pay for people to go out, and hand pluck weeds anymore. It was too expensive, and so what we did was we decided to buy, you know, these heinous chemicals that could go out and kill the plants and kill the weeds while leaving the plants alive. And for most crops, most of the time, that has had consequences to the environment that are unavoidable, where it's like we refuse to pay so much for our food as to avoid the use of chemicals. We can't have unhealthy food, and the food won't grow if these weeds are there. So it's like the end result has been, well, we'll just try to minimize the damage to the environment with these chemicals and to people, because, you know, to some degree, we're not entirely sure that the long-term consequence of, you know, even small amounts of these chemicals getting into the human system. So what's so cool about this and why I get so excited is because it's like, boom, it's gone. Okay, we don't need chemicals anymore. We just have a little robot that goes out and plucks all the weeds for us.
Which is like, I love one of the comments on it. Goes, what do Mexicans think of this?
Well, see, the thing is that this doesn't affect migrant workers.
Sure, because I'm sure they're gonna stop with just identifying and pulling weeds. I mean, they even say in here,
well, you're right. I mean, you know, you're right.
The start right of this right now, they're doing iceberg and romaine lettuce, and they're gonna keep adding. And it says, further in the future, robots working in fields could do more than just eliminate weeds. They could also monitor insects, identify pests, measure the soil pH and nitrogen levels, and check the water content, and eventually harvest.
Right, yeah, that is the long term.
This is cool. I, though, would love to see more of that emphasis on, and maybe this is just crazy talk, of, like, growing in towers, you know, going vertical instead of horizontal. I realize the ground's kind of already there, and so that's nice.
Yeah, I was gonna say, but it's not like we don't have enough room for this stuff.
Yeah, but I could just see where you could do them in big towers near cities, and then you control everything just like this, and you don't have to have huge big machines. But I don't know, maybe that's the start of it, right? Hey, you know what, we've automated this whole process, and we've got these big trucks driving around. Not trucks, but, you know, robots, I guess, driving around. Yeah. Hey, what if we just put them on little sliders that go across and, you know, stories? Anyways, I think that there's not necessarily a huge disruption in store for food, but I genuinely believe that people, like you were talking about, you know, they're not willing to pay a ton for their food, but there's also this desire to have healthier food. And I think as more people are learning about the genetically modified foods and the pesticides that are going into them, and, you know, there's just more awareness of what's going on, there's a desire for it, but clearly there's also financial limits that people are willing to put on the food that they consume. And the second you have this, like, okay, people want better food, people don't have the money to pay for the current way that we grow better food, that's where there's an opportunity in there for you know, some innovation and some disruption. And this is an example of that. Hey, we figured out a way to create a robot to automate the process of, you know, getting rid of weeds so we don't have to use pesticide. Hey, it's healthier, and potentially, I think that's yet to be proven, we can save money doing it this way as well.
You know, the cool part about, you know, the nice part about this is that, yeah, what you do is you have to find somewhere where the cost makes sense, where, it, you know, the cost of the fertilizer.
Gets out of a high-rise tower. Pesticides,
but you have to find that one market where you can build these things at a price where it's competitive. But the cool part about computer technology, and the reason why these things exist, is because our computer technology keeps getting better and cheaper and faster and more efficient, and the algorithms get tighter and better and better. And the thing is that it's like, yeah, right now it's totally not going to make sense. But 10 years from now, I would not be shocked at all if it's just like, it's just dumb to not put a computer into your machines that do all, you know, that do all these things. The most expensive part about these are going to be the actual equipment that does the picking and making sure that you have, you know, you have highly articulated arms that go in and, you know, dig out the dirt and pull out all the little roots. That's not going to do you any good because those are going to break down. That's expensive to repair and build. But if you just have like a cutter thing that just, you know, and goes in and takes care of the business real quickly, a really simple mechanical solution to, you know, to cleaning out the weeds while the computer technology, the heavy lifting of thinking is done by the robot, you know, by the computer. That's a system that can very quickly escalate but bring down in value, the cost, and make it to the point where, yeah, these things are crazy expensive, but when you consider how much the pesticides cost, how much the, you know, working with, you know, genetically modified foods cost, how much the labor cost is, mm-hmm. and all you need is one engineer who maintains these things every night, well, then we'll do that, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, the capital expense makes a lot more sense, and you can, you know, and you'll start to see this scale start to tip in the favor of these things. In my opinion is, and I've been saying this, you know, it's the reason why I chose a career. Well, the reason I chose a career I did was because Star Wars Episode 1. But the reason I stuck with it.
Episode 1.
I know, yeah. It's because of the droids from Episode 1. Yeah, that's like right. Literally,
okay, yeah.
The human killing droids. Like it's, man, I was a nerd. But the reason I've stuck with it is because I really believe. Yeah, good point. Touche. The reason I've stuck with it is because I really do believe that this is a, you know, we're not necessarily to a tipping point, but it's a cresting wave. You know, it's something that's coming. It's getting bigger. It's building momentum. And in the next 50 years, this is what, you know, when we talk about what is, you know, what is your goal in manufacturing? What is your goal in production? It's about bringing low-cost roboticism to, you know, and low-cost automation, which is what this is, and right. Reducing the amount of the number of people and, you know, the amount of, you know, brute force chemical type stuff, you know, specifically for food. Oh, it's cool. It's really exciting. I love seeing this stuff. Man, I'm excited.
That's cool. And I think it'll be like 2016 we'll start to see it actually working.
That's what the word is.
It's coming up.
Yeah. By then, we'll have more computational power than the entire universe with our quantum computers. So, I don't know, that's good. I got them that going for them.
Yeah. They'll all just be strapped with iPhones and Android phones using their image recognition technology to identify plants and process everything, and it'll be driving itself around. It's just all be autonomous, basically. Yeah. We'll be dependent on machines who then try to kill us.
Yeah, inevitably.
That's the way it works. I've seen the movies.
You know what's always gotten me really upset? If you ever read iRobot, so you see the movie, and it's like all the robots try to kill Will Smith, and like it's this big horrible thing, and he's got to kill the mother brain, whatnot. It's and you're like, wow, that made he's like the one. He's supposed to be the one nutcase in society that doesn't trust robots, and he's actually like supposed to be the crazy person. Like he's the dude who gets upset about what are those called? Airbags in your car, because sometimes airbags kill people. You're like, yeah, but most of the time airbags save people. So perhaps we shouldn't get, you know, so bent out of shape about, you know, one or two malfunctioning airbags.
Okay. All right.
But that's like the whole premise of the movie. But what's even more upsetting is if you read the book, the conclusion of the book is actually in line with my opinion. And in the end, basically the robots...
Wait, what's your opinion? Just to make sure I got that.
Which was like, robots are in general good.
Oh, okay.
And because we build technology to help us, and it's kind of like the airbag analogy. Yeah, it's not going to be perfect, but in general, it's an improvement.
Got it.
But the conclusion of the book was that the three laws of robotics are set up such that that everything they do is good for humans. Like, that's their number one goal in life. Protect human beings. Yeah, so they, like, start taking over society, and everybody's like, hey, don't take away our freedom, robots. And then the robots are like, yeah, but we're stopping you from killing yourselves. And the humans are like, oh, yeah, good point. And then the robots and humans live in harmony. It's like, it's so frustrating. Because you're like, and the movie was like, no, we need to kill the robots because they're bad. Robots are bad.
You just can't centralize everything. That's my big takeaway from all this. You can't, don't let it all centralize. Keep them all autonomous. Yeah. You know, you can't have some, like in iRobot, some big brain talking about it, or in, oh, it's just one of those
Terminator.
Nights. Terminator, you know, it's got this guy in it just kind of running everything. Of course, I don't know. I feel like the Matrix, they started out where it was all kind of autonomous. It still kind of is autonomous, really. They're just highly coordinated.
Yeah. So, they're freaky.
You know, there's that. Anyways.
You know what the one thing they did in iRobot, which I think is a brilliant design feature for any automated machines? They put red LEDs that lit up when the robots go evil. It's really something that all automation engineers should consider putting in there. You're like, yeah, you walk into your, you come downstairs, you're like, you got your automated toaster, make me some toast. It turns around, it's growing bright red. You're like, forget it, toaster. It's cool. You do what you got to do.
That's right. Which comedian was it who did that originally? I don't remember.
The book that he wrote was How to Survive a
That's
Robot
right.
Apocalypse.
I love it.
But, yeah, so that's that. So I liked that. That was early in the week. But there was some other stuff that kind of went down this week.
So it was kind of – I think the way to categorize it was some prostrating for the future happened this week. Is that the best way to it was very much, it felt like a competitive week in the sense that no one was actually releasing any products yet, but they're going to soon.
Yeah.
And we want to kind of give you the heads up before everyone else steals our thunder. But as a result, we all kind of drowned each other out in the noise. Yay.
Right. So this, you know, at the same time, it's like, yeah, this was like everybody went all in this week, which is pretty cool. So Microsoft, we've known for a long time, was going to be, you know, Surface was going to launch and Windows 8 was going to launch on the 29th. We've known forever it was going to be October. We've known for a while it was going to be that it was going to be on the 29th. But we didn't know what the price was. So Tuesday, Microsoft finally broke the news, and we got some pricing schemes for the Surface RT, which is the non-Intel.
It's Surface with Windows RT.
Right.
As if you have another choice for Surface.
Yeah. Also known as the Metro version.
Is there a Surface without RT?
Yeah, the Surface Pro. It's coming out later.
Oh, okay. Why do they just call it Surface and Surface Pro? Are they gonna say Surface Pro with Windows 8?
Well, because
their naming conventions are so stupid.
Right. They're terrible at branding, and they even have a bigger problem because they actually have compatibility issues with Windows this time. It's not just Windows Pro, Windows Home, and Windows Stupid, which is like their lowest version. This one is, you know, because it's based on the ARM architecture, it doesn't have reverse compatibility, so they really need to make an emphasis on the fact that this Windows is not normal Windows, so don't think it's normal Windows, which is completely deaf on the you'll fall completely deaf on the ears of most buyers who are the low information voters of the tech and tech field.
Call them low information buyers, perhaps.
Exactly. Libs.
Oh,
the libs. So
we are not implying any political standpoint, just for the record. That was just funny.
Yeah.
So, Surface with Windows RT. So, which device are you getting? That's what I want to know.
So the 32 gigabyte one will cost $499.
All right.
And will cost $599 with the cool keyboard thinger. That they've been talking about that nobody has actually used outside of Microsoft. I'm really curious to see how well that works, to be totally honest, because that was like the one complaint everybody had at the big demo, which was nobody's ever touched it. Nobody's ever played with it. I'm wondering, you know, obviously they're not going to sell a pro device that doesn't work at all, but I am interested to see how well it works.
So I'm looking here. And it says that you can also get a 32 gig with a black touch cover.
Ooh.
But if you wanted to get like white, red, blue, or pink, then it's actually going to be... So there's a $100 difference between the 32... how do I want to say it? With the 32, there's a $100 difference to get the black touch cover. But if you want a color other than black, it's going to cost you an extra $20. Am I reading that correctly?
That's what I believe.
Oh, interesting.
Which it works for Apple, so, you know, watch Microsoft try.
And then you could also get the 64 gig, so twice as big, but you could have to get it with a touch cover for $699.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
Which one am I getting? I'm not getting any of them.
And then they have a Surface Type cover.
Yeah, because they have like a touch-based one where there's no haptic feedback. They're literally just touch cells that are outlined on the keypad,
uh-huh.
And you touch them, and then they actually have a physical one with key depressions that clickety 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 clickety.
Probably more bulky, right?
Yeah.
And obviously more expensive because it's $129.
Right. And so they're trying.
Wait a second. Am I doing this right? So if I select the 32, and I say add, like say a red one. Is that $199 above and beyond? Let's see here. Pre-order now. See, I would expect to see like $619. Oh my gosh, no. Oh, because you get both. Oh, I get it. Huh. So if you get the 64, you're going to get a black touch cover no matter what. And if you say that you wanted a red one instead, you're going to buy the red one in addition to the black one.
Really?
Well, go to the... choose a 64. That is above and beyond. Okay, that's a little... I would... All right. Okay, I guess that's... Okay. Yeah, so I chose the 32 gigabyte, and I wanted the red touch cover.
Yeah.
The total is not $619. The total is $838.
Woo! Which actually is like right in line with the highest end iPad.
But you get two touch covers, I guess. That's cool.
Oh, baby. Yeah, that's right. I mean, I
do
guess
like their site design, just as a total side note.
Yeah, very actually, clean. It's nice. It's nice. It's definitely got, you know, it's well done.
You can tell that they've talked to Edward Tufte and he's helped them, and I appreciate that since I'm an Edward Tufte fan.
Yeah, definitely. It's good. It's well done.
I hear this. I heard they got a lot of pre-orders on these things. It's just something about it. I don't know.
Well, I mean, the thing is it's like, you know, they get a lot of pre-orders on it, but it's also a Windows machine. I've been saying all along, it's not like they're not going to sell millions and millions of copies of Windows 8. My question is how many are, you know, what's their year over year growth sales? And, you know, there's potential for there to be none, which would be a huge deal, even though they sell like, you know, a gazillion of them. You know, that to me is going to be, you know, that's going to be the real question. But, you know, and they're like going way out of their way too. Like they're going to be setting up, I think we talked about this last week. No, we didn't. They're going to be setting up these like little mini stores all over the place. So like if you go to like if you go to your local Microsoft store, which because I live in the Silicon Valley, I have one.
just rub it in.
Yeah, you can. You'll be able to go in and like play with the Surface. But since there's not very many Microsoft stores all over the place, they're going to set up these like little micro ones in the middle of malls and stuff, where basically they'll just be selling Surface and showing it off and demoing it. Boom, 29th, and people are going to be, you know, or 28th. It's 28th.
As a side note, my Snuggie keeps falling down. It's kind of annoying.
26th, sorry. I keep saying the 29th. That is, you know, James, you have to sit on a couch and, like, watch TV. That's what they're designed for. You're using it wrong.
This sounds familiar. Where have I heard this before?
there's a lot of analogies with the Snuggie. it's a good one. But one of the other things that they did, and this was actually on Monday, but they released their first commercial for Surface. It's not embarrassing, but it's pretty bad.
Really?
I
didn't think it was like memorable because I can't remember it, but I don't remember it being like, you know, that's Seinfeld and Bill Gates bad.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying, is it's like,
which
that was,
in some ways, that was even better because I do remember it.
I gotta say, I actually like the Seinfeld Bill Gates one. I thought that was pretty awesome.
Oh, you're right. That was like season one of The Office, awkward, hard to watch. That's what that was.
It was.
It's a wreck, and you just cannot stop because you're like, oh, how bad can this get? Oh, it just got – no, they did not.
They're doing another one.
Bill Gates just wiggle his butt for Jerry? No.
Yeah, that's – so
– hey, but it was memorable, right?
So I will – yeah, what I say is that it's memorable, and that's what my point is. It's just like their initial marketing campaign is it's about like the clicking sound that it makes – when the screen clicks to your tablet, which that's what every tablet with a magnetic cover does. Like, honestly,
oh, come on, Apple did different. A little commercial on that too. You can't
see, but that's my point. That's exactly my point. At the time, it was novel. Now it's not. Everybody else does it. Everybody like see, and it just clicks together. It's really cool. And they like they don't talk about the fact that, you know, they emphasize the fact that there's a cover, but they don't really emphasize why. No, it's a keyboard cover, and that's really cool. That's really useful. And the thing is you know, like, and we talk about, you know, I get all up in there, you know, I get all over people for their advertising campaigns, because there's the good campaigns, the ones that make me like that, make me take a step back and get excited about a company, are the ones that have an emotional connection, that tell you this is what life is about. This is why this is important. It helps you experience life. And they've got this new device that's got full blown Microsoft productivity. You can be productive anywhere. And it's like ultra portable. It's like the most portable device that they've, Microsoft computer they've ever built. And there was an article, J.K. Rowling is talking about her MacBook Air, and how it's changed her life because she can carry this tiny computer around with her anywhere and write. And it's just the coolest thing she's ever bought. And the thing is that Surface, this is the response to, you know, the MacBook Air. You can go anywhere with it, and you can do things, and you can do everything that Microsoft allows you to do anywhere in the world. You know, you don't have to have like 5-year-olds dancing around like they're super cool, and like, you know, and old people like doing it had the feel of an iPad but an iPod commercial without any of the uniqueness. It felt like one of those like Droid phone commercials. It just was so bland and so normal, and made me feel like you still have Microsoft doesn't know what this is. They don't know what they're selling. And maybe it's just because it's the first ad, but man, out the gate, that's supposed to be the one that you want people to go to YouTube to check it out, because they're like, man, this is cool. This gets me excited. We're like, you know, and they've got this, I don't know. So it just drives me nuts, because they seem to be, once again, they're missing the true potential of the stuff, of this cool technology they're building. But To make matters worse, Apple decided, and I think purposefully, and I've actually read a couple articles since Tuesday that have confirmed that, yeah, this is probably what was going on. As you know, 2 weeks ago,
I do know.
I brought to your guys' attention that Apple would be announcing the iPad mini and then launching it this last week. And or no, they'd be announcing it this last week and they'd be launching it this week, I think. Whatever. Basically, I was a week off and I was all grumpy, and I think I even brought it up that, yeah, Apple made me grumpy because they made a liar out of me, and like, oh, come on. I thought we were like, all my intuition got burnt. And then all of a sudden they drop it on the 23rd. Okay, we're going to make an announcement. You know, we want to invite you to our special announcement. We've got something more, which everybody instantly was like, okay, it's iPad mini. And I read like one of those articles where they're like deciphering the Apple invite, and basically, it was like, it's just the iPad mini. Come on. They were trying to figure out if there was anything more, and it was stupid, as those things usually are. But to me, what was so exciting about it is, so the big announcement happens this Tuesday on the 23rd. Microsoft Windows 8 and Surface
That's in like 2 days.
Sale, I know. Go on sale on the 26th. Apple will usually, and this has been their like modus operandi for a while, they announce on like a Tuesday and they either do pre-orders or full on go on sale that Friday. And so I think that there's potential here for one of the coolest showdowns in technology history, because it's entirely possible. And if there's rumors about when things are going to happen, nobody's quite sure when they're going to go on pre-sale, but pretty much everybody, or no, nobody is sure if they will actually go on sale or if they'll just go on pre-sale on the 26th, but they're going to start selling iPads on the 26th, either actually putting them in people's hands. They'll start in, because what they could do is like pre-order on the 24th and then start shipping right away. And this is Tim Cook. This is the supply chain management genius. This might be his like, you know, his masterpiece of putting together we're going to start pre-ordering, we're going to start shipping, and we're going to have them in stores 3 days later in mass, just to mess with Microsoft. I would get really excited if that were going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen. I think what's going to happen is they're going to start pre-orders on Friday, and they'll probably just go on display on Friday. And the real goal there, I think, and the reason why they're timing everything, is because they want everybody talking about the iPad mini in comparison to the Surface. As people are going out, checking out the Surface, playing with it for the first time, it's being delivered to your friends, people are carrying it around because they want to be cool and, you know, going to coffee shops and be like, oh, you have an iPad? I have a Surface.
So you don't think it's because Apple's afraid of Microsoft and Microsoft stealing, you know, their thunder?
No. I think it was. Well, it doesn't help Apple for Microsoft to steal their thunder, but I think that Apple feels like they're in such a strong position that they could push everything back a week to make sure that everybody is talking about the old rivalry, the classic David and Goliath turned Goliath and David, like this big...
All right. So if that's the case, help me out with this one.
Okay.
Because at the same time, a company, another company near Apple, goes by the name of Google, sent out an announcement.
They're on the verge of collapse. Let's be honest, man. Just take a look at their stock price.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Them, RIM, and HP. It's just horrible. They're doing okay.
Yeah, I know.
But anyways, they did announce or send out announcements as well, saying that the Playground is open. Join us for an Android event on Monday, October 29th. So not this week, but next week. But also, you know, all around the same time, and there was another article of they were like, we think we know what they're going to do. Basically, more tablets. They're going to come out with a 10-inch tablet. They're going to come out with a revamped Nexus 7. Basically, it's going to have – they'll come out with a 32, which someone was already accidentally shipped apparently. And they're also going to come out with –
oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, they were like – he ordered like a 16 and he got a 32 and was like, what? I – you don't even sell these. What? This is okay. And I guess like – yeah, he tried to return it and they were like, we can't help you. It's
– we can't help you. You're just going to have to
– you're just going to have to take it, I guess. So, yeah. So that was awesome. When everyone was like, oh, interesante, huh?
That's sort of a, yeah, Google's like, that's totally not ours. I don't know where you got that. You know what's so awesome, dude? What has Google's deal been this week? Like, they fire early on their earnings call. They fire early on their new tablets. They just are like, they're so excited. They just are like, they're word vomiting all over us.
Like, yeah, and I genuinely believe that it is excitement as opposed to angry employees trying to mess with Google.
Oh, yeah, that one was – yeah.
Yeah. So they're also so they think they're going to have a 32 gig version and a 3G 32 gig version of their Nexus 7, which is a 7-inch. And they also think that they're going to come out with a Nexus 10. Care to guess how big that one's going to be?
7 inches.
Ah, close, but no. It's going to be 10 inches. And, you know, there's a whole bunch
that's
of
right.
details around that.
Did you hear that Sony announced a 20-inch tablet this week?
No.
Yeah, it's like a 20-inch Surface tablet. It's like a full. It's like 11 pounds.
Holy cow! 20 inches.
Yeah, I know. It's so funny. It's just like.
Are you sure that wasn't like on The Onion or something? Because
nope.
That totally strikes me as something on The Onion.
I know.
We
got
this new 32-inch tablet. It's amazing. You can see your spreadsheets on the entire screen. It fits easily in your car.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah, it, no, I mean,
comes
like people
with an
like,
extra long extension cord.
It's just this big old screen that you. Yeah, it's pretty funny.
11
I,
pounds comes
11
with
pounds,
this.
That's what I was
backpack
reading.
With wheels.
I know.
That's so. Love it! Wow! All but, right, way to go, Sony.
Yeah.
Hats off to you for thinking way outside the box.
Yeah. Hey, you know, everybody else is doing this one thing. Why do that? You know, everybody else is not jumping
yeah,
off.
Yeah, I guess.
Somebody's got to try.
I suppose if you were going for, you know, the enterprise or business customers, and it's going to be like a Windows 8 Pro, not the RT. Okay.
I believe.
All right,
well,
baby.
And what they're showing it is it's like – it's basically a portable TV that you can put down on a table and have your kids play with. They actually showed some pictures of it. It's not totally awful. It's just – it's not designed for portability in mind. And
Fair enough. What
I think the acknowledgement is it's the future of smaller TVs are just going to be full-on tablets. And
or at least the future of how you get work done. You're not going to have a big monitor in front of you. You're going to be doing work on a table.
Right.
Interesting. All right. Okay, fine. I won't make that much fun of them. It does sound like an onion thing.
I was going to say, it's not a terrible – it's actually a decent – I mean, I don't have any use for it. I don't know a lot of people that have use for it. But I could see how in a couple of years you will look back at a 20-inch tablet and think, I can't believe – you know, the only reason it was so funny is just because it was in such stark contrast to what everybody else was doing, you know. Everybody else is trying to get these, like, 7-inch – and they're like, you know what? We'll just go the other direction.
I really think that companies need to – and I don't think iCloud is there even close yet, and I don't think Google's – whatever they're doing isn't there yet. But it really needs to get to a point where your data and information is all synced across the cloud so that we could jump between these devices. Because I could easily see where, okay, maybe I am using – 20s, it's almost not big enough if you think it's not going to be stationary. I almost want to see it's like 27 to 32 inches.
Yeah.
Like, give me a big surface. Like, you know, give me Microsoft's table surface to work on if you're going to go this route. And I could, you know, so I could do my work there and then pick up my phone or my tablet and, you know, go mobile and it's all there. I know that's the vision and the dream and they're all working on it and it just hasn't quite happened yet.
It hasn't materialized.
There. The problem is there's no like shared, open, non-proprietary version, you know, like Wi-Fi, you know, there's not that, which there probably never will be, which means it'll be like 40 years before it happens, which is sad, but that's
well,
okay.
Well, the nice part about the encouraging thing is that, you know, routers and servers have all different types, and they all manage to communicate and work together because of this wonderful little thing called Python. And we've figured out how to make things match, how to make data transfer in the past. And the problem is that it's a lot easier when you have these giant super-powered routers and servers, because efficiency isn't important. Or a relatively low efficiency process that makes two completely different systems compatible, is okay. It doesn't eat up all of your usefulness. Whereas if you've got your little Wi-Fi router and your laptop and your phone, and it's sharing all sorts of information, you know, through different operating systems and different whatnots, that can those inefficiencies that are inherent with that process, do a lot of damage. And as computers get better and better, it'll become, you know, less and less of an issue. And I think eventually, yeah, there will be kind of a seamless blend between all of your different stuff, because that's the direction that this stuff goes, but it's just not yet. And I think I agree with you. I think that there will be a real hesitation to get a bunch of smart screens until there is some sort of a unified link between them all.
So not to get totally sidetracked here, so to make sure I understand the timing on all of this, when is Microsoft expected to start actually selling Windows 8? It's sometime next
Friday,
week, right?
Friday the 26th.
Friday the 26th. Apple's doing their announcement on the 23rd.
Yeah.
And Google's doing their event on the 29th.
Yeah.
And Amazon and RIM are kind of sitting on the sidelines watching.
Well, yeah, except Amazon is actually in...
They already did their thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's RIM who's really like, next year, don't worry about it. It'll be amazing. Yeah.
Oh, my God. RIM, you guys. Yeah.
That's going to be pretty crazy.
I am super excited. Okay, so I got to lay this on you. So Amazon's not sitting on the sidelines. Let me tell you.
When's your shipping for your Paperwhite?
Yeah, see, this is... I suspected that this was going to happen, and my ship date or my delivery date was expected to be November 1st to the like 17th. So the earliest was the 1st, the latest was the 17th.
Wow.
It's been bumped. It will be delivered to my house by the 29th. It could be delivered as early as the 25th. So they definitely decided on Saturday, I think we're going to make sure that this kid gets his Paperwhite before. Which, not like, I don't think I'm special as far as Amazon's concerned. I should be, but I'm not. I think it's just, I think they suddenly realized that as soon as all of these other tablets get announced,
they can have a lot of people are going to go.
Yeah. Because I sat there and I actually sat over the cancel button for a little while, just thinking, okay, do I cancel it now and wait for these other tablets to come out, evaluate what's going on, evaluate what everybody's seeing? Because Google could start selling tablets on the 29th. They could just go live with their store and they're there.
Apparently they're already shipping them.
Right, exactly. So, you know, and Apple could be shipping within a week, you know, with anywhere between the 29th or 26th to the, like, the 3rd, or the 2nd. I mean, there is, like, you know, am I being stupid and impatient by not canceling my order and saying, let's let it all out. Let's see what the thing is, you know, and then I keep like waffling back to, well, you can always return it if it's not exactly, you know, if I get it and I make and I don't, you know. So this is actually the reason why I didn't cancel it, is because I reminded myself, how about I just not open the box until like the 29th and then pretend that it doesn't get delivered till the 1st. And then if I don't want it, I can ship it back and then, you know, and go with a new Nexus or a an iPad mini. Let's be honest, an iPad mini. Actually, the pricing's going to be totally...
I don't know. I think you might like that Android device. I've played with it. It's pretty nice.
I know. I've played with them too. They're not bad. It's all going to be... It's going to come down to pricing for all of this. I mean, that's going to be the long and short of it. But then again, I also have the...
If it comes down to pricing, then you're going to go with an Android device.
Not necessarily, but probably. Okay. Well, it's all, you know, it's relative pricing. If the pricing is okay. So significantly more than an Android device, then you can't, you know,
okay.
It's what I can, right. It's what I can justify. The thing is that the only thing that Amazon has going for them is that when it comes to new toys, I do have the restraint of a 5-year-old. So, there's a good chance that it'll show up on the door and it'll be open before I step back in the house. But I'm gonna take a deep breath.
It's gonna be hard.
We'll see what we can do. I don't know. You know what the one cool part about all this is? I'll be totally honest. The one really exciting part is I don't actually think it matters if you get a Surface or an iPad Mini or Nexus 10 or whatever. I think you're going to have a really cool device. I actually think, you know, they're all going to have their flaws. They're all going to have their problems. They're all going to have their, you know, their, well, it doesn't do this well. Or it doesn't, you know, I finally sat down and watched that SNL skit where the tech do I have to be here? you know, yeah, where you basically sit here and go like all these things, you know, and this is where I hedge on the show. All of these things are going to be amazing, you know, and it you know, and it's just sort of like. I'm super excited about it all, and you know, I love. To me, the real fun part is watching them all make the decision. No. We're gonna have it out this weekend. We're gonna brawl. Monday morning is gonna be the. You know, I want to be the headlines. I want you to be ashamed of how few you sold. I want you to be completely drowned out by the cacophony. You know, it's like, because that to me is like, that's what Microsoft and Apple are trying to do. Well, Apple is trying to do to Microsoft is they want no articles being written about the Surface, except in comparison to how many iPad Minis were pre-sold. Oh, there were 7 bazillion iPad Minis pre-sold and only 12 Surfaces sold. You know, they want it to just be so steep in their favor that everybody goes, wow, Apple's really a lot better than Microsoft still. I mean, it's so clear that that's what they're trying to do. And the best part about it is then Google steps in and goes, yeah, we just want to silence all of that discussion Monday morning. We want the headlines. We want people talking about, guess what, the new Google tablet's coming. And it's sort of like it's a big pissing contest between the three companies, and I mean that in the Irish drinking contest, not urination.
Way to clarify.
Thank you. who's the toughest here? And the best part about it is because, like you said, there's so much noise and so much posturing going on that the end result is, I think, all of them are going to get a lot of airtime, and people are going to be brawling over which one's the best and which one's the worst. And Romney and Obama are going to be like, but you know, we're trying to lead the free world here. Can you pay attention to us?
We have
for
a
day?
Debate, just so you know. Elections are coming up.
Yeah,
there's other voting
important.
Happening.
Yeah, but you know, for me, it's
I'm not going to go. Chances are, I'll keep whatever device I buy longer than you'll be president. So
that's a good point.
You know, what we need to do is we need to figure out how to make money on this podcast so that you can buy all of them and then give us your review.
That is my plan. You know what my review is going to be? Dude, they're all amazing.
They're all amazing and I'm not happy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm totally disappointed. It's funny. So I got this new podcasting app and my iCatch.
Heard about it.
And
the one you paid money for.
The one I paid money for, and it's really cool. Like, it's super complicated, and it took me like 4 days to get all the functionality worked out. But it like does everything automatically, and it orders all my podcasts the way I want it. You like hit one button and you play, and I'm still super annoyed by the whole ordeal. It's actually a better app than I've ever had for podcasts, and I'm annoyed, which is just the quintessential truth of that. Everything's amazing and nobody's happy.
You ought to see if there's any good Android podcasting apps out there.
Yeah, back off. I think that is available on Android, actually.
Probably.
It's one of those. It's actually it's good. I would recommend it, and you know, it's actually almost a good thing that I had to pay for it, because if I didn't have to pay for it, I probably would have given it 13 seconds a look and said, nah, it doesn't do what I want it to do.
Wow.
And moved on. Because I paid for it, I actually sat down and decided to figure it out before I bought another one, and I'm actually pretty pleased by it. It works. Which
I think there's a lesson in there somewhere for developers.
Yeah. Yeah, for developers and for me, really.
Yeah.
But
so you've got yourself a Paperwhite, but you're going to look and see the Surface first to determine if you want to switch out for that.
Yeah, no, I probably won't be getting the Surface. That's a little bit out of my price range, but I'll be honest.
I know that, can I say this? Sure. HP is having an event to celebrate the release of Windows 8. For obvious reasons, HP is excited, being the maybe or maybe not the largest PC manufacturer of Windows machines. Depends on if you go with Gartner or IDC. It was kind of funny. I think this was last week technically, but you got to love companies and how they posture themselves, because Gartner came out and said, whoever it was, you know, Lenovo is now number one or something.
Nice joke. Whoever it was, I don't even pay attention.
Well, to I just
my chief competition.
Yeah, one of those guys. But then, like, it came out and said they're number one, and oh man, HP was quick to like to send back memos and to send like I got like three emails, you know, from higher up people, including Meg, you know, to me personally, letting me know.
It's because she's your friend, right?
Yeah, BFS. I got a picture to prove it. To let me know. Because Bezos may not know you or care about you, but Meg knows and cares about me. Anyways, Zuck for that matter too. anyways,
you and I are gonna be friends.
Yeah, we sent it. They sent out emails saying, "Look, Gartner might have said this, but their numbers are totally whack because they don't include. I think it was like desktop PCs or something. Like, and when you include those numbers, which IDC does, we're number one. So take that." I was like, who really? Why do we care? Is this bragging rights? Is that what this is about? Who cares? Really?
Well, you're afraid you're going to like, slippery
slope? Ooh, they're not number one anymore. I guess I'm going to look at Lenovo.
I think there are low information buyers who will go for who do
who
think
are reading
that
way. Gartner and IDC reports. Those people? Come on.
Well, what the?
They don't care.
Somebody will go, you know, oh, I need to buy a computer. I'm going to go with HP. And like, don't go with HP, because it'll
fine.
You know, it's one of those pieces of information that can filter down into to the lay people. And I'm really posturing myself on this ivory tower of technology this week.
those
you know,
people.
And, yeah, and
plebeians.
You know, and exactly. And I could see how people could make that decision, and they just want to cut it off at the pass. They don't want there to be any mistake. This isn't real. Because, you know, Lenovo is going to be trumping it up. We're the number one PC seller in the world because we're the best. You know, that's always the question. Well, why are they the number one? Well, because we got the best customer service and the cheapest prices, so you better go with us. And there are people who will make that their decision on who they buy with based entirely on that, and, you know, and they don't know what a gigabyte is.
So those companies are excited about Windows 8, and we're holding internal events, I guess, to I don't know what, but have a party.
Yay,
this is our savior. $10 stock price. Think of the past.
Think of the past. Oh, that's It's going to be a good year. I can tell.
Yeah.
But
It's all right. So, wait and see what happens, I guess.
yeah, I look forward to going into an Apple store and playing with the iPad Mini.
And a Microsoft store to play with the Surface, and a Best
Oh,
Buy to
yeah.
play with the Nexus.
I probably won't go to Best Buy. I go to Staples. There's fewer people.
You
I feel
know,
less
my
accosted.
local Staples does not have a Nexus device, which is kind of annoying,
What?
but thankfully I have a friend who does, and so
Nice.
I get to
You know what?
play with it.
You know what really annoys me about the Staples I've been to? My local Staples, at least. The jack for the Nexus doesn't like fit right, so the device is always completely powered down. So I have to like go in, I have to like jimmy it so it'll start charging it. It'll like walk around the store looking at stuff, and then I'll come back and I'll have like enough charge to turn on, and then I have to like hold it weird to make sure that it
Yeah,
stays charged
that's
so I can
annoying.
play with it. That's super lame. That's worse than it not being there, honestly, because at least I'll just leave and be unsatisfied as opposed to waste 20 minutes and be unsatisfied. But I got to play with it, so win some, you lose some, I suppose.
Yeah. So what's this new Facebook thing about?
So this has been kind of I don't know. This has been people have been talking about this. Have you gotten so if like when you post something on Facebook, have you gotten the little prompt that says promote this on Facebook? Have you gotten
I
that?
did see that. Yes. I did it. It was actually for a. Yes, I did see that. Yeah.
Did you click on it?
No, I
I did.
dismissed it.
I did. I clicked on it, and it was basically like, give us $7, and we'll promote this, which is like,
Really, was it $7 or?
yeah, $7.
Really? That's
$7.
not a
Yeah, I don't
small
know if
amount of money.
it's not. Well, it's okay. So this is the thing, is it's like, they're talking about how like basically what they're doing is Facebook used to like they had this crazy algorithm for how many people your tweet or your post would actually reach and like how big of your user base would it reach and stuff and it's like how many likes was it getting, how many people were clicking on it, looking at it, and it basically would resonate in everybody's Facebook feed longer based on how popular it is. And now what they've done is they've severely constrained that. Now it can only reach like 5% of your population, like as a maximum.
Awesome.
Which is like, yeah, super lame. And so basically what they, and people were talking about how like, well, things can't go viral now because tons of people can't, like, you can't get it to hit your entire list,
Actually, if you
which
have a
isn't.
birthday, there is a small window in there where it can go viral because all of a sudden they post on your wall and now they'll show up in your feed and you'll show up in theirs because you had that recent
Right.
communication. So you just gotta have a birthday and then it'll go viral.
Yeah, are you telling us because you had a birthday this week? That was your experience.
Yeah, it was. Well,
Nice.
I just noticed a ton of people, obviously, wish me happy birthday because I'm super popular and cool.
Yeah.
And as a result, though, my timeline was suddenly filled with all these people who I like, oh, yeah, you actually do post on Facebook.
Right,
Because I never see it
yes.
normally.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm guessing that's a two-way street, right? I mean,
Yeah. Sorry. You know what? Yeah, it's a two-way street. So one of the big things is now it's like information can go viral, but it has to be reshared. Like if you make a comment, I can share your comment on my news feed. And that's the only way for it to really spread. You can't just like it. Unless, of course, you're willing to spend $7. In which case, they're like, yeah, it'll reach a ton of people for sure. And my first reaction to this was like, this is the most obnoxious thing ever. Like, honestly, you would like, and this is like 2 weeks ago. We didn't really talk about it on the show. I don't think we talked about it at all. But like my first, I was like, man, talk about like a surefire way to lose your friends. Like people paying to get their cool tweet or whatever, showing up in their news feed. Oh my gosh, like I would just be. I would, that'll be that's the quickest way to get me to defriend you. And then I thought about it for like 2 weeks. I'm totally going to pay to promote our podcast tomorrow morning. Because I'm like $7. It's like a meal. Like I'll go cheap one day and make sure that you know I don't eat leftovers. I don't know. It's not a big deal, but I kind of want to experiment with it. I want to see what happens. And I'm like, this is actually I could actually see as just sort of like, especially if I had like, you know, I'm doing well, I got some money in the bank. I could see how like once or twice a week you could pay to promote just the like, man, I just had a great meal. It was totally nice. Promote. just to get people to be like,
here's a picture of my dog.
Right, exactly. I would totally pay $7 just to get people like, where does he, why is this showing up in my newsfeed? I haven't looked at his profile in like 17 years. Like, who is this kid?
What if there's a business model in there? Like, you become an Amazon affiliate and you're like, I read this book and it was so amazing. Check it out. And so, you know, all your friends click on that link, and because you're an affiliate, the next time they buy something, you get credit for it.
It's actually, I don't know.
I'm just saying.
Might be worth checking out.
I don't know how all that stuff works with short links and whatnot, but that'd be interesting.
That would be interesting.
But $7? Hey, you might be able to clear that. Depends on the book. I reviewed this textbook. No, the trick is to do some sort of, you know, super popular one that's not like a $99 book or 99 cent book.
Yeah.
It's probably way more complicated than I want it to be, but
right.
It'd be interesting to find out.
Yeah, it definitely would be. And I think, yeah, I don't know. I'm mixed. There's a part of me that like absolutely hates this sort of thing, but at the same time, I'm like really excited about it. I don't know. I don't think it's going to help Facebook much in the long run. I think it's going to be one of those, I think people are going to do it from a novelty perspective. And there will be a certain amount of bigger, medium-sized companies and big companies will include that as part of their marketing budget. You know, and so Facebook will get a good chunk of money from there. I don't think it's going to make a huge difference on their bottom line. And I definitely don't think I think the reason why they tried to give it to you is because they set it at a price point where people wouldn't take advantage of it all the time, but also they tried to make it low enough where, you know, if you got, you know, like let's say you want to, you know, you're in a play and you want to advertise the play, you go, oh, come see it, and you do your paid promotion. Like, I think the goal is to get, you know, really a lot of users to use it. And I don't know if it might have some early effect, but I don't think it'll have really a long-term lingering effect, but it's a little too expensive. I think if they lowered the price, though, I think if it were like 99 cents, I actually think that people would do that for stupid stuff. I actually think that would, you know, but they're figuring it out. You know, it's a novel idea, and they got to try stuff because they're not making any money. But
they're,
you know,
making money, just not as much as they'd like.
Right. But it's, you know, it's an interesting, what I like about it is it goes back to the idea of microtransactions. You know, Zynga got, you know, they got their money while they had it as a, you know, off of microtransactions. And games like Team Fortress 2 by Valve, it's super popular and they don't charge for the game, but they make tons of money off of it because of in-game microtransactions. So Facebook can kind of become the master of the microtransaction, you know, not just in Farmville, but in your posts and in your, you know, in the different things that you do, you know, not just buying Flare, but weirdly enough, Flare could be, you know, it could come back as part of its, you know.
Yeah.
Could you imagine, like, you could, you know,
I'm still thinking gift cards is the way to go, but micro gift cards.
I agree. I think they missed on that. It was not a foul ball, but wasn't a very good hit. But I agree.
And they honestly, they only needed to get two gift cards in there to make it totally worth it.
Yep, Best Buy and Amazon. No, Amazon and who?
iTunes.
Amazon and Facebook. iTunes. There we go. I don't know why I didn't think that. Okay. Amazon and the Google Play Store.
Yeah. They even do gift cards.
Nah. Probably not. But yeah, you know, I don't know. I shrug my shoulders on this. You know, I think it's an interesting. I think it would be. Many people don't see. Many people. Most things I've read seem to have the same initial reaction that I had, which is like, "This is horrible. Why would you do this?" And but it's kind of like.
But you're gonna start doing it. I still I okay. All right. Here's the brilliant business idea. I'm gonna. Ooh, I like that.
I'm gonna say yeah. You got kind of a Superman all right, thing going on.
Here's there. Here's the brilliant business idea. Okay. Just tell me how crazy it is.
Okay.
You become an affiliate of a site, Amazon, whatever. You know, someone who's selling something. And then what you do is you take the time to put together a video, and let's even say it's just a PowerPoint-based video, where you're either doing a review or a how-to related to this product. You post it on YouTube, and in the video you've got the click-on link thing to, you know, buy the product, and you get, you know, your affiliate credit for it, plus in the description you've got it. So you put that, you post that, awesome. Hope, you know, people are going to watch it, go there. And then you also put that on Facebook where you got trusted friends and you go, hey, check out this video review I made of this product along with the link to it. They watch the video. They go, oh, love it. Video is starting to get shared more on Facebook. Maybe you can also do it as a picture, you know, and whatever. Pay your $7 to have that promoted. People are like, oh, totally going to watch this video. They get informed. They love it. Buy the product. I bet you could make some money if you did those videos quasi-regularly.
If you had a big clout score, I'll bet you could get some real movement going. You know?
You're saying you're gonna pick up the web traffic from web searches and people watching YouTube. You're gonna pick it up from your friends, and theoretically, maybe if it's a good video, you know, it's got some entertainment value to it in addition to educating and selling your product.
right.
You know, you get a little mini viral effect of them resharing or at least liking and commenting. I don't know. I'd be worth experimenting on.
Yeah, definitely.
Just saying. You'd have to do it on something bigger than books, I feel, because that's just like, I don't know. You're getting, what, 10% off of a $9 book? That's not a lot. That's a lot. You'd have to have a lot of sales to make that worth your effort.
Right.
I feel like. But if you could do, you know, something in the $20 to $30 range and you're making 10 to 15%, I could see that.
Yeah.
It's highly viable. Anyways, just put it out there. There's a business idea. It's for free.
You can have that one.
Yep.
It's all yours.
Watch my video. Click on the link.
Yeah.
Anyways, all right. So Facebook's coming up with ways to try to earn money.
Yeah.
And you're gonna try a couple. I love it.
I am. Monday morning, I'm gonna pay promote. We'll have to look at our numbers, see if we've had any increases. Come next week.
We will do that. So there is another up and coming entrepreneur. Can we still call Zuckerberg up and coming, or is he kind of arrived?
I think he's an arrived.
Okay.
I think he's solidly arrived.
just checking. Well, yeah. Well, I don't know. You have companies like Zynga, right, where they're kind of struggling right now, and Mark Pincus is not exactly, you know, I would happy with his situation. Maybe not. I would say, yeah, he's arrived, but he is definitely, he's not quite in the pantheon of some other classic entrepreneurs / business owners. You know, he's not quite there yet.
He's mid-range.
Yeah, he's not. I mean, I would say like Jeff Bezos, definitely in there. The Google guys, definitely in there. And maybe it's just you got to have like a sustained company for like 10 years, and you do that, okay, you're in.
Yeah.
And, you know, move kind of past your first trick.
Right.
Which Google's working on.
Yeah.
That first trick was a pretty darn good trick, okay? Let's be honest.
Yeah.
You know, it was pretty amazing. All right, anyways. Yeah. Another guy who will put him in the up and coming group, I suppose. And I'm going to be totally honest here. I don't fully know what I'm going to talk about other than I think I like what he's doing. But Jack Dorsey.
All right.
He is the co-founder of Twitter and the founder/co-founder of Square. So, all right, let me take this back a step. Jack Dorsey actually, like, invented Twitter back when they were part of Odeo, and he was working with Biz Stone and Evan Williams, and Odeo wasn't exactly, like, killing it. And so he was like, I got this crazy idea for taking text messages and putting them on the web. What do you think? And they gave him like 2 weeks. Said, well, build out a prototype and let's see what it looks like. So he grabbed a handful of developers from Odeo. They worked on it, and they started working on it a little more. And, you know, it is what it is today. So he invented Twitter. All right, that's kind of cool.
That is very cool.
That's the Steve Wozniak type of, you know, if we're in the invention phase of things.
Yeah.
And with Square, I know for a fact that he did the first sketches of it, but I think he teamed up with someone else to help him actually write the code for it. That, and I think he actually had some money by then, so he wasn't just, like, you know, making it happen.
Right.
Which is nice. But anyways, there are two things, one of which is something that he wrote on the Tumblr, which is where he does his personal blogging. And then the Forbes actually also did a little write-up on him, which I think is cool. First one is him. He talks about, let's reconsider our, quote, users. And he says, yeah. Users is a noun, a person who uses or operates something, especially a computer or other machine, or a person who takes illegal drugs.
duly noted.
synonyms equals consumer. So anyways, he said that he was in a board meeting, and one of their newest directors, Howard Schultz, don't know if you recognize that name. He is the CEO of Starbucks.
There we go.
I pause for emphasis there. Give you all a chance to guess. I would put him as up there and, you know, pretty smart, successful guy.
Yeah.
Just saying. So anyways, they were having a meeting, and Howard Schultz asks him, why do you call your customers users? And Jack's answer was, I don't know, we've always called them that. And he's just like, hey, he was a, you know, he's a geek, he's a hacker, that's what they've always said. And so one of the things that he was like, you know what though, you know, really, we need to change from users to customers. And so he says, at Square, we're removing the term users from our vocabulary, replacing it with customers and the more specific buyers and sellers. The word customer, given its history, immediately sets a higher bar or a high bar on the level of service we must provide or the risk of losing their attention or business. And then he shared a letter basically kind of, you know, doing it. And he says, I love this. He goes, if I ever say the word user again, this is in his email that he wrote to his employees at Square. He goes, so if I ever use the word user again, immediately charge me $140. And I was like, that's nice. I like it.
One more time.
He says, if I ever
say it one more time.
Yeah, okay. Are you listening?
Yes.
Okay. Says, if I ever say the word user again, immediately charge me $140.
He likes $140, doesn't he?
Yeah. Well, makes sense. So just one of these things where what I like about him is he's, you know, he's trying to think about these matters. And I fully agree with him that, you know, the words that you use help sets the tone for your culture, which drives a lot of the decisions that you make. And, you know, and I just like, you know, I like the path that he's headed on. And then there's this Forbes article where they talk about, you know, him and his past and how his mom was like, apparently at one time he was like total hippie 9000, like with the dreadlocks. And I guess he's got like crazy tattoos and just kind of didn't really have a direction in life. And his mom was like, I don't know if he's ever going to find out what he's doing. But he figured it out, which is cool. And it just kind of talks about a little bit of how he, you know, of how he got started. And but I like at the end of it, it was talking about, you know, the way that he runs Square, I guess. So like, for example, it's a very open place where it's just like all the conference rooms are open window glass type of things. So you can see everybody and there's no cubes or stuff like that. And furthermore, if there's ever a meeting, and this kind of sounds like it would get annoying fast, but if there's ever a meeting with more than two people, someone has to take notes and forward it to everyone else in the company so that everyone knows what's going on at all times and what are the decisions Whoa. Being made and what are the, you know, issues being raised.
I would never meet with more than two people.
Yeah. Oh, you're going to like this one, by the way. Dorsey. He has been invested, let's see, Square's Series A round a few years ago. One of their investors was, care to take a guess?
No.
Vinod is the first name.
Oh, nice. Vinod, yeah.
Yeah. Khosla.
Yeah.
Raises his head again. So he's an investor in Square. So how about that? The guy who invested in Square a couple years ago is now investing in weed-killing robots.
That's Vinod's a cool dude. I'll be honest. I'm if I could have been, you know, I never actually got to meet him. Who am I kidding? He and I were great friends, man. We'd go out, we'd hang, talk about cool technology.
Yeah.
Did that.
So he sees his company as kind of a it says like it runs as a newsroom where his job is to be the editor in chief, kind of curating ideas that come from his staff and suggesting ideas to them.
Nice.
I was like, yeah, that's a cool way to think about your company. But anyways, yeah. I don't know. It's cool to read about him, and maybe it's because there's no more longer cool things you can read and learn from Steve Jobs. He's kind of done everything he's going to do. So I'm moving on to the next guy.
Yeah, yeah, I guess he kind of has.
Yeah, yeah. But anyways,
what I like about him and what I like learning about Jack Dorsey is he definitely is the sort of guy that tries to comes up with a different paradigm. Okay, we've had this paradigm of understanding for a long time, and there's this new one. He comes with this new base concept, and then he tries to expand it outwards to its logical extent. You know, and let me try to put words behind that. It's like the whole idea of, you know, mass communication and sort of giving the power to the people, decentralizing communication, and making things really simple in the microtransaction world, right? What is it that he did with Twitter? That's exactly it. He decentralized communication, and it's all microtransactions. What is Square? It's a decentralized, you know, financing system, and it's all microtransactions compared to, you know, like a Visa or you know, usually you're the guys who operate big card things. You're either you're a big company like McDonald's and you're able to buy your own card readers, or you go through another company. No, but we're gonna make ours super cheap, and they're gonna integrate, you know, and into mobile technology. He just has these you can tell that he's got these like base concepts, and once he takes a concept and he knits it into like how he looks at the world, every problem that he attacks, that he looks at, that he tries to fix, he uses this vision that he, you know, of how he thinks technology should work, you know, and that is very Steve Jobsian. What, you know, Jobs wasn't building computers that, you know, that last 10 years he was working for Apple, running Apple. But what he did is he had this very clear understanding of what technology should look like, and he was able to distill it down to principles that he could then teach other people to embrace. And Jack Dorsey's doing that, and it's really a cool ideas that he's coming up with. They're very much, you know, it is, to me, when technology is at its best is when it gives, you know, power back to individuals, the power of expression, the power of productivity, and, you know, you don't require big corporations to do these things anymore. Now individuals can do them, and I don't know, I like him too. He's a cool dude. He's definitely done some, you know, I like his projects, and I hope he gets to stay around and keep doing awesome stuff.
Yeah, I agree. And another one to kind of pull it all together because we like to do this kind of stuff. Management by wandering around. Do you know what that is? It's this idea of you as a manager literally just kind of like walk the halls and talk to people and see what they're doing, and that's how you manage them. Oh man, my Snuggie's falling. So anyways, management by wandering around. It was made famous by couple entrepreneurs known for leadership and innovation by the name of Bill Hewitt and Dave Packard.
Oh man.
Smart guys. They did it, and Dorsey
What did they
has
do?
they I'm not going to say invented, but they definitely perfected the art of management by what I would call walking around or wandering
Right.
around in this article. Pretty amazing. It's hard to do in a decentralized company, just PS, when your manager lives hundreds of miles away.
Yeah.
But anyways, one of the downsides of that. But he does that too. And his whole thing was like, what we try to do is create autonomy at the, to drive decisions down to the lowest level and create autonomy. But we have them all working under some sort of centralized value, which is kind of what you were just talking about. He creates that vision, and here's where we're headed. Here's the direction. Now go make it happen.
Right.
Which, P.S., The Onion has started up a new series of parodies that they're calling the Onion Talks.
Oh, yeah.
Care to guess who they're parodying on that one? Ted Talks, but it's their own version
Okay.
of it.
Right. All right. Oh, my gosh. Oh, okay. I was like, I don't have any idea who they're talking to. Who are they making fun of? But yeah, that makes total sense. And I sort of want to end the podcast early so I can watch them because I love TED Talks and I have a feeling, and I love The Onion. So this seems like it'll be up my ballpark, up my alley, up my
Yeah,
ballpark.
my. So, and their videos are only like 3.5 minutes too. Here's one of them. Sound familiar? This is great. You'll see why this is relevant in a second here.
Two birds with one stone. Although birds are no longer the problems we need to kill, the idea of achieving two goals simultaneously still remains very much a part of the human experience. Every day, we use over 400 million gallons of fuel. There is so much compost in the world. We're looking in the eyes of two horrible birds, and we just need a rock that is big enough, efficient enough, and innovative enough to bludgeon them. That rock is an idea. My idea to create a car that runs on compost. So how does it work? Well, it's quite simple. Instead of using gas, it uses compost. Compost is
Applause.
efficient. That's my idea for what we'll call the process of converting compost into fuel.
Yep.
The idea is there. It just needs implementation. Step one, devise an idea to create a car that runs on compost. Step two, create the car. We've already completed step one. We're not builders. I'm an idea man. I link up with implementers and then we share the money. Once the car is produced,
We share the
we can
money.
sell its designs to a major automaker. That's another idea.
That's another
We
idea.
just need people to do those things. It'd be great.
It'd be great. So there you go. There's more to the video. But
That is so awesome. I mean, we just need, we're so close. We just need your help to make this happen. We're already here. And I love the step one is X. Step two is Y. We've already done step one.
Yeah.
You're like oh my gosh. Oh,
Totally
these guys
reminds
are
me of that
brilliant.
the Ali G skit where he's pitching ideas to VCs, and one of the ideas he pitches is a hoverboard to them,
Right.
and he's like, "It's a board." He goes, "And it hovers," and they're like,
Yeah.
what are you talking about? That doesn't exist. He goes, no, I saw it in Back to the Future, so it exists. We just need to figure out how they made that and make it. That's my idea. You're like, what? Oh, it was great. But anyway, so I thought sometimes, you know, they talk about, like, Jack Dorsey. Now, obviously, he invented some of the first prototypes, so he's not exactly like that. But he's like, I set the idea and I set the vision, and you guys do it. You have autonomy to figure it out. Like, oh, it's awesome. Oh, great. You gotta love The Onion. I remember I was, I think it might have been on, like, iTunes U or something like that when they were first getting started. And they invited the, maybe it was Google Talk, I don't know. But they invited the, like the Onion editors in chiefs, because I think they had just come out with a book, you know, so they invited them to come talk and share their story. And one of the questions was like, you know, what's your opinion of the internet and, you know, all that stuff. And they were like, the internet has been very, very, very good to us. We love the internet. they're like, we were made for the internet, really, which I would totally agree with because of the nature of their content. And, you know, you wouldn't necessarily subscribe to like their newspaper magazine thing, but dude, I'd totally visit their website, or, you know, it's enough where you'd want to read it recreationally, yeah. I guess you wouldn't pay money for it necessarily, but man, it's funny stuff. So there you go. Onion talks.
Yeah.
Compost cars. The idea is there. 50% of the way.
Now we just need the implementers.
Yeah, like Jack Dorsey. Make it happen. So anyways, so yeah, I'm starting to, you know, like the rest of the industry, fall in love with this guy, I guess. I suppose. It's okay. I do use his two products, so, you know, that's fair. But yeah, there you go.
Hey, man. Yeah. Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So, we probably have enough time for one more story.
Sure. Let me hear it.
I was going to ask you,
oh.
What happened to, yeah, I was going to ask you about what happened to Google Shares, because, I mean, you know, did you get any word on that? Because it's an interesting question, because usually what we talk about on this show, anytime we talk about stocks, we talk about how stupid they are, because they don't actually reflect the value of a company or what they're doing.
Right.
But people tend to think, but your earnings do have something to do with it, and and the stock drop, because two reasons. Number one, I think it was because they accidentally published the firm that represents Google accidentally published the earnings report a couple hours early, and that just caused an unbelievable panic, which I think is what's responsible for the size of their drop. They actually closed trading early because of irregularities, aka the company that represented them messed up big time, and there's probably going to be a giant lawsuit, which will be good fun for those guys. But there also was really a pretty steep miss on Google for their earnings call, and what was, do you have any idea what the deal was there?
Yeah, I mean, so there's a numbers reason, and then there's the story behind the numbers, basically. What they're finding is their Google. So the main way that Google makes money is they put ads on their search engine. People see the ads, they click on them, and Google gets paid for each click, right?
Right. AdWords. Woo!
Yeah. It's literally a multi-billion-dollar idea.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
It's a pony that keeps kicking.
Yeah, no, it's a good idea. It's brilliant, in its simplicity. So, anyways, they reported that the amount of money that they make per click, I guess, has decreased 15% since last year. And the other thing is that it's like the fourth quarter in a row that number's declined, even though the number of paid clicks on ads have climbed up 33%.
So they're making less money even though more people are clicking on them.
Correct. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And they say that the reason, well, what they're finding, surprise, surprise, is it's a mobile problem, is people do click on ads on mobile devices, but they're not buying things. And so the ads are not worth as much.
Right.
And so advertisers aren't paying as much for those particular ads. But because of the way the ads are displayed on mobile, people tend to click on them, probably mostly by accident. But even still, it's like, dude, if you're on a desktop and you're doing a search and you see an ad, you're doing a search because you're looking for something. And when you're on a desktop, it tends to be more indicative of doing something productive, whether that's shopping or researching, whatever. Whereas when you're on a phone, it tends to be more consumption based. So when you see an ad, you're not necessarily doing something proactive.
Yeah. Right?
You might be looking up some information, but it's because you're having a conversation with a friend, not because you're trying to learn about the certain products you can buy it.
Right.
So what you're seeing is this Google being in the exact same boat that Facebook's in. They're watching their company go mobile, which, I mean, they've said it a while ago that most of their queries will eventually come off of mobile devices. And so they're grappling with it, trying to figure out a way to make money with it. And I think there's two things. Number one, they're like, we're making this transition, and it's just not as – we just don't make as much money right now. And as this transition happens, we're going to go down, but eventually it will – start rising again. But it'll be rising, you know, at a new lower level, unless they can figure out a way to make ads more compelling, or, you know, earn as much off the ads, which no one's really figured that out yet.
Right.
Or I should at least say AdWords is not that answer. Let me put it that way. You know, this idea of promoted tweets and stuff. Okay, sure. So maybe promoted search results. Maybe. I don't know. And you know, and there was an argument that someone made where they're like, Google's not going to be around in 5 years, which I think is total garbage. And they were like, well, on Google's shopping page, now it's all 100% promoted search results because they get paid for those, or, you know, paid for search results. They're like, so they're sacrificing the quality of their system in order to earn more money. If someone comes along with a better shopping search engine, people are going to use that instead. Which is like, okay. I could see that, and their whole argument was, this is just a symptom of a bigger problem, and Google's going down, and they'll become, you know, irrelevant, like Yahoo. Kind of like, okay, fine, so you're saying Bing is going to replace them? Nah.
Right.
So anyways, there's that. They also got this whole, like, Motorola Mobility albatross
right.
thing that just, they're losing money. I think in retrospect, Google's going to say, wow, that was a whole lot bigger of a mess than we ever imagined it could be.
Yeah. That's the one and that's kind of why I wanted clarity, is because a lot of people were really most of the articles I was reading were really grasping on the idea that, oh no, Google's not making any money off of mobile, and, you know, people are using Siri to
search. They are, search just not as much.
I mean, Android. Yeah, or instead of, you know,
Google. You also got to understand, is like, each time Google gets paid, they give a piece of that to Apple. So
right.
They're also sharing the revenue, which is, you know, impacting them.
Right. What my point was going to be is, it just doesn't seem like it seemed too convenient that's the narrative that people are most afraid of for Google, and that's exactly what's happening. It seemed like, now there's got to be more to this story, and and Motorola is a good piece where I think, yeah, I mean, if you look at what they've been doing, they've been giving out massive payouts as they've been firing people. I mean, yeah, that has just been a bit of a boondoggle, and I think, you know, long term, it'll be an all right situation for them, but I definitely think that, you know, they bit off a bit more than they could chew, you know, and for now. And, but everybody's like, but you know, at the same time, everybody's like freaking out about Apple because are they going to sell enough iPhone 5s? It just seems, it seems more along the lines of, you know, people aren't spending as much money on advertising. And that's the other aspect of it, you know, that you think, well, the economy as a whole, you know, people have to decide where they're going to put their advertising dollars. And, you know, although every month it seems like we're a little bit better than we were the month before, it's not like things are great and everybody's starting to dump money back into the system, you know, and eventually that catches up with everybody. You know, and I think that, you know, I wonder how big of an effect that sort of thing has on Google, where, you know, you got mid-sized companies that are just the last couple of months coming into a presidential election, just in the uncertainty of, you know, who's going to be president, they decided that they're going to hold on to that extra $1,000 this month. Yeah. Just in case, you know, and
or, you know, they're looking at their budgets and saying, well, we're going to start spending the day after Christmas, you know, really start hitting things hard. And so we're in a waiting period right now or something, just because there's so much going on. Why am I going to compete with Google and Apple and Microsoft for airtime? I'll let all that happen. No, I'm sure that what it is, it's a bunch of those little pieces coming together. There isn't some huge, like, oh, this is it. It's harder to talk that way. You know, it's more fun when you have the smoking gun and can point to here's the reason why and then predict their downfall, which
it's not going to happen. Especially when it, you know, fits the narrative that everybody's expecting. That's really great.
Yeah, I think Google's in a place where I think, like most most technology companies are in a constant state of transition. And the question is just how well are they handling that? And, you know, you could say, like, right now, okay, fine. Apple's not in transition at this very moment.
But they are.
Well, in a sense that, like, they've got their phone, they got the tablets, they got their computer business. They're not transitioning to a new business model right now.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, but they did a couple years ago, right? Back in 2007, that was when they said, okay, we're transitioning, FYI. And, you know, and it was even iPods before that, right? So they're constantly doing it. HP is obviously doing it right now. They're just not doing it very gracefully, which is why they're getting pummeled. RIM, also not super gracefully. Amazon is a company that has managed to do it magnificently. I don't think they get enough credit for it because they do it such a good job at it that you don't even notice. You know, where they went, yeah, we sell books. Oh, actually, we sell all consumer products. That's cool.
And it just sort of happened all of a sudden.
Wow, I can find anything on here now. That's awesome. And then like, oh, and now we're going to sell digital books, not just paper books, and we want to give you a device to read those too. So now we sell tablets and e-readers. And you're like, whoa, that's cool, you guys. And for them, it doesn't feel like a transition. It feels very natural and obvious. And they're just extremely good at it. And now I like the way that Amazon transitions, and they're always in flux too, which is awesome. And Google's another company where, you know, they're not idiots. They know that their revenue comes from one very big obvious place, and they see the mobile trend. So they got these Android devices out there. They're going, you know, part of it is they're taking a bet saying we're going to make money off the App Store. We're going to make money off of web searches that we don't have to split with anybody. You know, they're thinking about these glasses and these autonomous cars, and you know, they've got these other big audacious ideas that they're working on. Even Facebook's in a transition, and they're like, what, 6 years? Not even 6 years. Right. They're like 4 years old, and you know, they're transitioning all of a sudden. So,
you know, and it's funny. That's normal. Honestly, the thing with Google is, and people forget this, is that they have reached an unbelievable amount of prominence in the mobile space by giving away their software. But there's actually no reason why they have to give away their software, especially now. They're so prominent, everybody's so bent on them, as long as they're the cheapest alternative.
Said they're going to give away their software.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, all they would need to do is depreciate whatever version of Android they're on and start to bring, you know, if they really needed to make a big difference, the next transition would be Android 2.2 or, you know, 2 version 1, you know, whatever. Like, you know what, I guess what my point is it's, they now have this massive product, and as long as they're cheaper than everybody else, there's not going to be any reason for their hardware partners to jump ship. And, you know, and as long as they keep the price low, but they're selling $200 million a device and 200 million devices a month or whatever stupid high number it is. You know, what do they make? They make like $20 billion a year.
You understand? They're not selling them. It's their hardware partners are selling them. They just gave them the code.
Right. Well, if they were to charge a licensing fee of like $10, I guess what my point is that they could move into a Microsoft model and
yeah,
financially do very well as soon as, you know, we say that they're a one trick pony right now, but the thing is that they actually have a number of different products that have become these fundamental underpinnings for commercial companies. You know, they could never charge Google search, even though it's the most, you know, well, if you could just charge like 1 cent a search, then you'd make a gazillion dollars. Well, people wouldn't use it. They'd go to a worse service that's free. But that's not how the corporate world works. The corporate world thinks, no, we're going to balance everything out, and we're willing to make a financial investment. We're willing to raise the price of all of our phones $10 in order to pay a $10 licensing fee. You know, as especially if our alternative is designing a completely new high-end set and paying $50 to Microsoft for Windows 7. You know, if that's their, you know, if that's their alternative, they'll stick with Google. You know, and so Google, it's like I couldn't worry less about Google because they're a one trick financial pony right now, but that's because they choose to be, not because they don't have any other options. And you know, and that might be their transition.
Yeah. So I think it'll be okay.
I think
people were just surprised by the miss. They weren't expecting it to be that bad. And so anytime you have that, you know, financial analysts tend, they drink way too much coffee from what I can tell.
Yeah.
They just tend to way overreact and do knee-jerk reaction things. They're just like, come on, guys, really? But that's my observation of it. And so we don't recommend any stocks on this show because of that.
Yeah.
Except for well-established index funds. Put your money there.
Yeah.
That's where mine is. And in real estate, but that's a different matter. So, well, yeah, that's what's up with Google, I guess. So, just also a side note, because it is related to Google, I'm going to cheat and quasi-do another one. I did read a cool article that was talking about the trouble with Chromebooks.
Yeah.
You know, once again, because they came out with another Chromebook, and I don't remember how much it was, but you know, it's not cheap, right? And you know, it's like $500-$600 for this Chromebook, and what they were saying is that the problem, it's a perception deal. Whereas you think Chromebook, what do you think?
Chrome, yeah, your browser.
Browser, just a single app, and they go, well, it is a single app. And when you immediately think single app, you go, well, it should be a pretty cheap device to run a single app. You go, yes, but this app, shockingly enough, is now one of the most powerful applications on your computer because it has to be able to do everything. And as a result, it requires a real computer to run this single app. And to make a real computer costs real money. And so now all of a sudden you sit there and go, well, I'm just going to spend another $100 or two and I'm going to get a regular laptop that and install Chrome for free. Hey, I got my app plus everything else. And so it's one of those where it's like conceptually makes sense. You only need the browser in order to, you know, to pretty much do 95% of what it is that you want to do on a computer. But because that one app is so powerful that it can do 95% of what it is that you want to do, to make the machine, you got to build 95% of the machine in order to do it.
Right.
And at that rate, spend the negligible amount and get 100% of the machine and don't worry about it. And so yeah. That was, which I read that and I was like, totally makes sense. I do have this perception that it should be, you know, this machine should cost me $50. It's a browser. And it's like, no, it doesn't. It costs more than that.
Right. It's a, yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
So one of those where I'm sure they would love it to be a real business. And, you know, some product manager somewhere has a spreadsheet, I guarantee you, that shows, you know, billions of devices and billions of dollars being made from these devices.
Right.
trust me, I know how these things work. And he is just quietly archiving that particular document and
right.
not worrying about it. Because, you know, that was the green light that was used to okay the project, and it's not turning out to be that for obvious reasons. So,
yeah.
Especially, I mean, it's one of those, man, had they come up with the idea like 10 years ago, it could have worked.
I was going to say, the problem was, I think.
Browsers were that powerful 10 years ago, so, you know.
Right. I think the problem was, and definitely the Chrome notebook, the whole idea of we're going to change the operating, we're going to have a new operating system, we're going to change how operating systems work, was that idea was starting to congeal in Google at the same time that Apple was launching iOS, where Apple was, we're going to change operating system. We're going to change how operating systems work. And, you know, and then because iOS was hugely successful, Android, which was a parallel program, completely different department, but similar in concept, we're going to change how operating systems work. But more in line
well,
that with...
Well, the revolution was needed in the phones, not on the computers right. to start with.
Right, exactly.
And so the ones who went with the phones first won, which was right. not Chrome.
Yeah, and yeah.
Still
and...
isn't Chrome because the desktop really isn't broken, which is part of the problem that Microsoft is going to have.
Right, and the thing is, for me, and my opinion is, Chrome as a project, though, is, you know, it's doing fantastic. I mean, their numbers are unbelievable right now. I think.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they and so it's like, and what they do on the Chrome notebook, it translates into the Chrome browser on your computer and on your phone. It's one of the most amazing pieces of software that Google has developed. Like, honestly, it's crazy how powerful and some of the different things that they do. And, like. And I mean, and I gotta give them mad props for completely being able to avoid all requirements for administrative privilege in order to execute it on a computer, which is something that really angers Microsoft because you're not supposed to be able to do that, and they found a way around it, and it's caused all sorts of security issues because they're like, you can't just put a browser on our computers without asking. But they I don't know, it's fun. I like it.
Yeah,
I hope they stick around.
They will. They're not going anywhere. So there you go. That's the news for the week. It's a lot.
Yeah. It's a good week.
It's the anticipation, really, of a bunch of cool stuff happening next week and next Monday.
Cannot wait. I'm so excited.
I know. I want to hear more about the Paperwhite. You know, you might have to open it just so you can review it for us.
Yeah, honestly.
Just so you know.
Yeah, I probably will.
Now, if you could wait until next Sunday to do your unboxing, think about it. Think about it. No. I want to actually get a full, like, maybe you could record your unboxing, but I want to get, you know, I want to have real impressions, not just first impressions.
All right. Okay.
So, what do you think will be the first book you read on it?
I already bought Do Androids Dream of Electronic Sheep? So that'll be my first one.
It's appropriate.
Which, yeah. For those of you, yeah, actually... Yeah, I didn't even think about that. But for those of you who don't know, it's the one that Blade Runner is based off of.
There you go. Cool.
But yeah.
Very cool. I'm looking forward to seeing all the news.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I think we're way past our time, which is okay. I thought it was good.
Good. Me too.
Quality, wholesome fun. So, everybody, thank you for joining us. I am James wearing my Snuggie furlough. My brother is Matthew Mega Giants fan Furlough. There you go. And we will talk next time.
What's been going on today, this week?
Nothing.
Oh.